Okay. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the first episode of the Why Am I Dead podcast, an analysis on My Chemical Romance's album, The Black Parade. I am your host, Violet, and I'm joined by my co-host, Karen.
Hello.
And yeah. Okay. So I guess we can go ahead and start. So this episode, we're going to be focusing on the first, what is it, three or four songs? Let's see, three, but I counted The End and Dead as one song. So it's going to be four songs. But yeah, so, and then we will continue for three more episodes after this one to talk about the tracks after. Let's start off with The End and Dead, or like we can start with The End because that is the opener to the album. How did you feel about this one?
Honestly, I really liked it. I'm not gonna lie to you, it was a bit inaudible since I am not a big My Chemical Romance listener, so I don't really know the style of the band or really how they really work. But
you've listened to some though. From I've forced you to a couple of times.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
Also, I mean, everybody knows Welcome to the Black Parade, so it's like,
What if I told you I didn't know about it before you showed me?
You didn't know about Welcome to the Black Parade?
Not.
There's
the only,
no way.
Listen. The only song I really knew was Teenagers, and that's only because it was one of their mainstream songs.
See, before I actually like looked at the numbers, I thought that Welcome to the Black Parade had more streams than Teenagers. I didn't realize that it was as popular as it was.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you now, I didn't know Welcome to the Black Parade. Like, I didn't know the actual song. I knew Teenagers before.
That's so weird to me. I grew up with my sister. She was an MCR fan, or really, really more so of just the Black Parade. She didn't really listen to their other albums, so she was like a fake fan. But
oh, what a call out!
But I have a lot of nostalgia for Welcome to the Black Parade.
Yeah, was your sister like?
I didn't like it.
An emo.
I didn't like it when I was a little. Yeah, she was an emo. We're both. Like emos. I got her like a shirt from when I went to their concert. That was cool.
Sweet.
We have like matching shirts. It's awesome. But yeah, okay. So The End. We start with The End.
Going off with the whole your sister being emo, I think that's part of what The End is about, if I really did understand. If not, being a poser.
Pull up the lyrics for like the whole album while you're, do you have them up?
Yeah. That's
okay,
what I'm
so you're
looking referencing. At it. Yeah, I'm referencing. Because
okay.
Really paying attention, you know, obviously it's like, you know, if I'm gonna quote, wipe off that makeup and then throw on the black dress mix, you might wake up and notice you're someone you're not. So I guess, I don't know. A lot of emo culture or just like punk culture is a lot of really known as just wearing black and just entirely black with heavy, intense makeup. And I feel like in literally the opening verse, it's just, you're literally a poser. Come on now. Like, I don't really know.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. So let me pull up. I thought I had the lyrics up, but I didn't. So let's go. Let me pull up. All right, The End. So, okay. So you think the song, your interpretation was just, it's about being emo?
It might be more than just that, but it might be, I guess, the trying to fit into the emo genre when you don't really know what it's entirely about, because obviously, you know, being emo, I guess, I don't know much, but you know, it's part of like a, can we say like a subculture kind of, I don't know,
yeah,
can we classify it as that?
So do you think that this song, because it's the opening track, is sort of setting the mood for the emo vibe for the rest of the album is what you is yeah. what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Kind of like yeah. an introduction to like what's there to expect. That definitely makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I mentioned to you earlier that this is a concept album. So meaning it has a story like I don't know, like Pink Floyd's The Wall, Igor, Tyler, the Creator. There are others.
Kind of like there being lore, like right, conceptual
there's,
lore.
There's a story behind it.
Yeah.
And so, is there anything that you can pick from this track that you think would have anything to do with that?
I'm not so quite sure yet, but maybe towards the end, I guess the save me, or also in the second verse, third verse, sorry, something about my funeral and having front row seats to the penitence ball or something.
Oh, that's verse two, not,
is that verse
there
two?
Is no third verse. But yeah, it's.
I don't know. It's probably different on my screen. It's different on my screen.
It might be, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. I'm not entirely sure, actually. I'm still very confused. Very confused. Maybe, like, further in, I'll get, like, you know, I'll grasp, like, an idea, conceptual idea of what's going on.
So, this track, there's a couple of interesting things about this song. So the first one is that it's obviously called The End, despite it being the opening track, which, you know, is a little bit of irony, but it's also setting up for the theme of the album, which I'll sort of delve into a little bit, but I'll say this as sort of like a hint. You know the song 5 Years by David Bowie, right?
I'm gonna disappoint you. I don't know.
You don't know this? Okay.
No, I don't know it. Well, no.
That is a little disappointing.
Sorry.
So the 5 Years by David Bowie is the opening track on his album that came out in, I think, the 70s. It's Ziggy Stardust and The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. It has a really long album name, but it I'm pretty sure that's it. Anyway, that song is about David Bowie confronting his own mortality. The hook is like, we got 5 years. And so this song, it actually interpolates, meaning that it sort of, interpolation is similar to sampling, but instead of taking the original clip, you sort of remake it.
Mm-hmm.
And so this song interpolates David Bowie's 5 years, like on the, like the second, I don't know if you want to call it the chorus or like whatever, but it's like, I said, yeah, na, 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 na. So that whole bit is the same as 5 years. The melody is the same. The entire song's chord progression is the same, which you wouldn't notice it at first, maybe, if you, like, you know, weren't looking out for it. Mostly because The End is, first off, like, more of a modern and harsh rock song. And 5 years is, you know, it's older. It's not, like, it's just, like, a classic rock song. But also, the melody is on 5 years is played from a piano, while this one is played, at least in the opening, from an acoustic guitar. But it has the same chord progression, which is G, and then it does a walk down to E minor, then it goes to I believe C sharp minor, and then C major. It's either C sharp minor, C major, or C sharp major, and then C minor. Either way, it's the same chord progression on both songs. So
The End is basically just heavily influenced by David Bowie, and specifically Five Years.
It was like, I believe they, It like the band has admitted to that it is like very obviously inspired by 5 Years by David Bowie.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, next song, we can go to Dead, which is, tied to, the end, because they fade into each other, which
I was wondering when the end had actually ended.
Right.
And as I was listening, I was confused. I looked over to Violet, and I was, I don't know.
Combined, I believe it's about 5 minutes.
Yeah, it was a really smooth fade-in. It was a really smooth, right, like, crossfade. So, I really appreciated that. Thank you, MCR, for that. I really appreciated that. So, I didn't really notice.
You did notice that there was a transition. You just thought it was the same song.
I just thought it was the same song. I didn't realize it was too
good. Because there's an obvious... So, the end opens up with a heart monitor. And, you know, it's going beep.
Yes, yes.
Beep, and then Dead.
Yes.
Opens up with flatlining. So.
Oh wow! Doesn't that?
Yeah.
It's like kind of like a loop. Oh wow!
Yeah. So it's sort of it's like the end, and then at the end of the end, flatline. So, I'll use Dead to sort of introduce you to the album's concept, and then we'll further develop it as we continue. But, So, Dead is the first, like, song that really kind of spells out the theme of this album, which is death. That is quite literally what the entire album is about, and what effect that has on people, or a person going through that. So. If you look at the lyrics from the end that lead up to Dead, you'll notice that the final words, besides like the save me, you can't take me, that stuff, it says, get me the hell out of here, too young to die, and my dear, if you can hear me, just walk away. And it also, as well, while that's being sung, it says, save me, you can't take me away, as I mentioned before. So as he's saying, like, you can't take me away, flatline goes into Dead, with a crazy, absolutely absurd guitar solo.
I have a high appreciation for guitar solos after MCR's guitar solos.
Yeah.
Specifically, I think it was Dead.
Yeah, the craziest, the guitar solo, not only on this album, but just from My Chemical Romance in general. I can't think of one that really, both, you know, there's the opening one, and there also is one in between, like, the bridge, and then, like, the outro, or whatever.
Yeah, and just so, if you guys haven't picked up yet, I am very much not a certified My Chemical Romance listener, and Violet is, so
right.
It's really a learning experience for me, because I've never really listened to MCR, I've never really taken the time, but here I am listening to The Black Parade, and now on Dead.
I forced her to, but
yeah,
you know,
it was kind of, listen, I appreciate it, though, because...
It's currently my most listened to album of all time. I checked my Last FM. I have 1,460 Scrabbles, which is a Scrabble is just like a stream. So anytime that I stream any song on the album, it gives me a Scrabble. It keeps track of. My second one is Punisher by Phoebe Bridgers. Anyway, and that one's at 951.
Wow. Okay.
And, yeah. So there's like a 500 gap in between, and they're also my third most listened to musical act. Anyway, back to Dead. I need to stop bragging about how good I am at listening to.
It's emo. A talent. It's really a talent.
It's a talent.
It's so emo. Okay.
Nobody does it like me.
Nobody does it like you.
So, So the first verse says, "And if your heart stops beating, I'll be here wondering, did you get what you deserve?" So let's talk about what does this song mean to you? Not necessarily in in the perspective of the album as a whole, but just this song, and you know, maybe the end as well, since they're so tied together.
Okay, give me a second to think this through. This is a little deep. but let's see. I'm trying to find the right words for this, because obviously the end was about death, right? And this is, dead is more about like the, can I really use resentment as a definition? I don't think I can really use it.
There is definitely, like, you could say like resentment towards what? Towards dying?
Towards dying, yeah. Like, being dead, is it, like...
Right.
Because it's really questioning the fact of whether or not, like, oh, is it, like, you know, fair that you're dead, you know? It's really, like, a... It isn't fair. Like, death isn't fair, kind of. That's kind of what I'm getting at here.
Right.
With the, you know, did you get what you deserve? Oh, like, you never fell in love. And if you get to heaven, I'll be here waiting, yada, 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 and so on and so on. So probably, right. Like, death, the unfairness that comes with death and being dead.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Now, same question, but in concept to the album, what do you think it means?
To the album...
And you could say that, like, it's the same answer, but, you know, maybe if your thinking is different, then.
I mean, I'm not really sure. I mean, I guess it would probably be the same thing, because.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's a valid answer. So. Yeah, I mean. So this song is interesting because it's a little bit, a theme with this album is narratively, it's a little foggy about what actually happens in what order.
Yeah, it's not really chronological, which makes it a bit more difficult to, I guess, follow. But
well, it could be. The issue is that there's so much wiggle room with that kind of, with how much narrative is provided, that you really can't tell. Like, a lot of, like, some people think that the end is actually the end, despite the fact that it, you know, is the beginning. Even though, you know, you hear the heart monitor, or, like, they feel like the end and dead is the, like, it is the actual death of the main character, who, I'm not sure who came up with the name, but the, like, official or the given name for the character is the patient, like, hospital patient. This, even though I feel like there, you can't, you're technically not wrong in assuming that the patient does die in this song. I also feel like it's not how I see it, mostly because of the, like, you know, the opening line says, "And if your heart stops beating," you know, and, you know, pre-chorus, "And if you get to heaven," you know, and it's like, but it all, you know, it, you know, and to the point of, you know, the argument that I'm going against right now is, have you heard the news that you're dead, which is the opening line to the chorus. But the bridge after the second chorus, I think there's only two choruses on the song. Yeah. So the bridge after the second chorus is from the perspective of a doctor saying, in my honest observation during this operation, found a complication in your heart so long, because now you've got maybe just 2 weeks to live. And then it sort of, the line after that is the patient speaking again, saying, is that the most both of you can give? Implying that there's probably two doctors, you know, or at least a second person present. And then it goes into the solo, and then the breakdown, which is the breakdown and outro, which is like the la 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 la, and it's like sort of cheery, which, you know, it's like, you know, it's like la 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 la, it's kind of ironic, but, you know, to sort of support that sort of jokiness,
given the situation the patient is right in.
And, you know, to sort of like back that up, the outro it repeats, if life ain't just a joke, then why are we laughing? So basically just sort of being like, you know, it's like, this is sort of like hysterical, you know, like you're in hysterics because of, you know, you've just received news that you have 2 weeks to live.
It really puts you into that kind of wow perspective, even though you think, you know, you're dead.
You know, you don't really believe it. And going back to the chorus, have you heard the news that you're dead? To me personally, I feel like that's sort of saying like you're practically dead. Like you're done for.
There's nothing.
Your heart is still beating.
Mm-hmm.
You are practically dead because, you know, your life is over. There's nowhere to go from here.
It's just, you're stuck in that state. You're basically gone for, there's nothing left we can do for you.
Right.
Boom, done.
Right.
So it's kind of the kick, the realization of, oh, I'm basically going to die. There's nothing left to do. I might as well just, you know, intensely process it and just maybe chuckle it off or laugh it off.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. I totally see that.
Right. And, you know, now, you know, given the context of this, now if you look back at the end, it makes more sense. Sort of, you know, it's still, you know, the timeline of it is still foggy. But, you know, you do open with a heart monitor, so, you know, the patient is in the hospital. And, you know, you also have the come one, come all to this tragic affair, wipe off that makeup, what's in is despair. So throw on the black dress, mix in with the lot, you might wake up and notice you're someone you're not. So, couple things there. I agree. I do agree, like, with your interpretation that it is definitely, like, inviting, like, this sort of emo crowd, which could be, you know, sort of, kind of like an invitation to the Black Parade, you know?
Oh my god, but... oh my god. Is the dress... Wait. Sorry, I'm probably gonna get totally off.
Mm-hmm.
It's preparing for the death, like the actual funeral?
Right, yeah.
Oh my gosh!
But you got it, yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's what that is. Clicks. Yes, I see it now.
So right. So throw on the black dress, mix it with
a lot.
It's like
a goodbye song.
Because everybody's wearing black. Right.
It's like the outro song, the patient's outro song.
Right.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
Right, yeah. So, so basically, and then in the second verse, from it seems to be from the perspective of the patient, which is sort of foggy on the first verse, at least for most of it, if it's coming from the patient or not.
Mm-hmm.
The only things that I'd argue would be that is like definitely from the patient is, "So gather on piggies and kiss this goodbye. I'd encourage your smiles. I expect you won't cry."
Yeah.
Which is, and then it goes into the insane guitar and like the big boom of the album. Yeah. So, I'm looking back at it, I'm sure it puts it a lot more in perspective.
It definitely does help. I see the connection now. I definitely see the connection, you know, we're saying goodbye. You're at my funeral, right. You know, you couldn't do anything for me, but now I'm dead. So what are you going to do? Come to my funeral.
Right.
Yada, yada, yada.
Right. And there's also in the second verse, there's another contusion, my funeral jag. Here's my resignation, I'll serve it in drag. You've got front row seats to the penitence ball. When I grow up, I want to be nothing at all. So the first two lines, another contusion, my funeral, that part. So contusion is like an illness, I believe. It's a bruise is what it is. And mm-hmm. jag is like a sharp object that like a stabbing or something. You've been impaled somewhat.
Okay.
And so those are just like sort of like medical terms. Is, you know, like another, he has like another bruise, you know. You know, his death is painful. And then here's my resignation, I'll serve it in drag. So obviously in my brain, This line sort of paints a picture of like a man in like drag, like RuPaul's Drag Race. Right.
I thought this was a queer reference when I first listened to it, and I was confused as to why there was a queer reference in the middle of a song that
it's actually not uncommon for Gerard. There's a song called, you know what they. This is about to get a little bit weird. There's a song called "You Know What They Do to Guys Like Us in Prison," and one of the lines in that song is "They make me do push-ups and drag." So it's not uncommon for Gerard to talk about like actual like dress-up drag, but it also and Gerard has also talked about his own gender
identity
struggles. Mm-hmm. He is a man. He does identify as a man. He uses he, they pronouns. But he also, you know, has had struggles with his identity. A lot of the times because he was bullied for looking like a girl in school. Mm-hmm. But through the lens of the album, you know, drag could also mean like, you know, like physically being dragged. I think it's dragged.
Dragged
from, you know, like a lifeless body being carried out. Or it could also be a reference to maybe like a hospital gown of some sorts. Obviously, my resignation is dying. And so maybe, it's, you know, it could be like, you know, any of those. I'm sure it's like a double entendre or whatever, you know, he meant it in more ways than one. And then we have the next two lines of that same verse. You've got front row seats to the penitence ball. When I grow up, I want to be nothing at all. So, penitence is like remorse, right? So basically he's saying you've got front row seats to the remorse ball. You know, he's saying, you know, a funeral. And then when I grow up, I want to be nothing at all is a little bit of dark humor, I guess, about his situation because he is dying. And we'll get into more later. He's unsatisfied with how his life turned out.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of a hint at that.
Sort of hinting I grew up to be nothing either way. So
right. And we'll talk a lot more about that, especially later on in the album. But I think I think that's all I have to say about The End and Dead. If you have anything else that you would like to say about that.
Well, I think they just have very nice blended concepts. Now that, you know, contextualizing it helps a lot, you know, understand what is actually going on.
Right. So next track after Dead is we have This Is How I Disappear. This honestly is probably the song that I understand, but understand the least about. To me, it's kind of self-explanatory, so I never really did a ton of digging into it. But basically, it's pretty much about dying alone. You know, the chorus is, "Without you is how I disappear and live my life alone forever now." And basically, you know, I'm dying alone.
Yeah. Well, also, there's a part. Can I ask you about this?
Yeah, go ahead.
So, I'm not sure which verse this is for you. I don't know what you're referencing or looking at. But the part where it starts off with, "Can you hear me cry out to you?"
Yeah.
Okay, so I can't hurt you anymore? Is there a, you know, is there any context behind that? Like, who is the you and who is this directed at? And what's the pain they've inflicted on this so called person, this you character?
So one of the most important things to understand about Gerard Way as a singer is that he is very much into, like, sort of the theatrics of it. So yeah, his voice is an indicator of something, like, always. You know, a lot of the times, especially on their earlier work, that something is anger or some strong, powerful emotion like that. Or, you know, like despair, sadness. But it, you know, here, instead of expressing purely an emotion, I feel like it's, you know, also playing a character different from the one singing the rest of the song. You know, for the rest of the song, like, besides maybe, like, the you know, the breakdown in the bridge, those two parts are a little bit foggy, but for the first two verses and the first two choruses, it's one character who I believe is a person being affected by, like a person close to the
dying individual, I guess.
Right, yeah, the patient who is okay, dying. So basically, it could be either, you know, it's sort of like both from the perspective, it could be, you know, interpreted as the perspective from the patient, as I mentioned earlier, of, like, dying alone. But it, you know, it also says, "I'll live my life alone forever now. Without you is how I disappear." So that part could be, like, you know, a person trying to cope with the fact that they're going to spend the rest of their life without this person that they cared so much for. And so, to get to the bridge, "Can you hear me cry out to you? Words I thought I'd choke on. Figure out, I'm really not with you anymore. I'm just a ghost, so I can't hurt you anymore." So that sort of feels like, to me, the patient speaking from beyond the grave, which does support the possibility of Dead being the actual time of death of the patient. Basically, you know, he straight out says, "I'm just a ghost, so I can't hurt you anymore." So it's, you know, it could be, you know, genuinely, like, the patient trying to connect to a loved one that they cared for in the afterlife, but they hurt. So it's sort of, you know, messed it up. And then it goes into the breakdown after, "So I can't hurt you anymore." And it says, "You want to see how far down I can sink? Let me go. I'm so far away from you." That one, I feel like, is sort of narratively in a different space than the "Can you hear me cry out to you?" Because, as we'll talk about on the final song for this episode, which is The Sharpest Lives, the patient is sort of sinking down into misery, so much so that they're kind of distancing themselves and hurting the people around them.
So it's more, it could also, I guess, be interpreted as like emotional damage, I guess, and not inflicting that kind of emotional damage anymore while being a living being. You know, if let's say the patient is, you know, has an illness, then no longer will other people around the patient have to suffer by pitying the patient for having this illness. And so once the patient dies, no longer will the relatives or anyone who surrounded them have to deal with that anymore.
Yeah, definitely. And this kind of thing is not uncommon to be told in a lot of stories. The sort of trope that, you know, when a person is dying, they sort of start being very harsh and sort of bitter. One example of this is have you ever watched Your Lie in April?
No, listen, I've been told about it, but
this is like a minor spoiler, but you should still watch the show regardless. But the main character's mother has some illness. I don't remember if it's ever actually revealed, but she has an illness, and basically she becomes physically abusive to her son, who is at the time is like, I want to say like 10, very young.
Yes.
And it's really, you know, like unjustifiable actions.
Yes.
Obviously. You should never put your hands on your child for any reason.
Yeah.
But it is explained in the show that the reason that she's acting like that is because she needs him to retain the information that she's trying to give to him, but she doesn't have she only has so little time because
she's trying to get it.
I can understand that
firsthand, because I myself do have relatives who are sick and, you know, obviously have emotional issues and mood issues, so I understand where it's coming from. It's very difficult, so obviously, you know, you want to make the best of your time, and especially if you have a child, you obviously want to you know, give them the last couple of lessons that you can, you know, give your child, you know, leave a little before you go, because you really don't have much time left. So I understand where that's coming from. And I can see how, you know, the patient is kind of like, you know, like, I'm sorry, you know, it's kind of like a, it's okay, now I'll die on my own. You don't have to worry about me anymore. I'm gone now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's kind of a smooth transition onto the next song, which is The Sharpest Lives. Which instantly starts out with this sort of like raspy kind of, Gerard is singing like, well, it rains and it pours, you know, he's singing down here with his, like, you know, he always sings sort of nasally, but he's already like, you know, he's like down here, which, you know, is called like, he's sort of putting a little bit of like natural distortion into his voice just by speaking so low or singing so low. And, you know, it starts off with, well, it rains and it pours when you're out on your own. If I crash on the couch, can I sleep in my clothes? Because I spent the night dancing. I'm drunk, I suppose. If it looks like I'm laughing, I'm really just asking to leave. So when it rains and it pours when you're out on your own, that's obviously like, I'm sad when I'm alone. Something like that, you know.
Yeah.
If I crash on the couch, can I sleep in my clothes? I spent the night dancing, I'm drunk, I suppose. You know, sort of reckless behavior with literal consideration for others, you know, can I crash on your couch?
Like, you're conscious, you know, of your behavior, but yet
it's like,
you're still
it's like, it. I mean, it's, yeah, but it's also like, sort of not conscious as well, because, you know, he's also, he's like conscious of what he's doing, but he's also like, well, it's not that bad, you know, it's like, because it's, he's like, I'm drunk, I suppose, but
just, you know, not aware of like, you know, the severity of the situation.
Right. It's like he knows what he's doing, but he's willfully ignorant to how it could affect other people.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's this alone, you're in time for the show. You're the one that I need. I'm the one that you loathe. You can watch me corrode like a beast in repose, because I love all the poison away with the boys in the band. You're the one that I need. I'm the one that you loathe. That's a reference to, I believe, like a relationship. Either it could be, you know, familial relationship, or like a, you know, a romantic relationship. Either interpretation works, because, you know, it's like, you know, you love someone, but you've been terrible to them, so they sort of are trying to like distance themselves from you because of your actions. So, and then it's, you can watch me corrode like a beast in repose, saying repose is like sleeping, or like, you know, rest. Basically saying, you can watch me die. You can watch as I die. And, you know, corrode gives it this sort of like rough, when I think of like corrosion, I sort of think of like rust on metal, because it's like, it's not like quick. It doesn't happen instant, but it's a long,
like a slow invasion
that leads from shiny metal to brown, rusted, you know, something, you know, I can, you know, it's like brown, green, whatever.
Yeah.
Invasion. That was like once shiny and pretty is now, you know, rough and, you know, has lost its luster. And then, because I love all the poison away with the boys in the band, probably like, it could be either, like an ironic statement about like chemotherapy, because it's like literal poison. But it also could be like alcohol, you know, which is more likely, because, you know, chemo hasn't been mentioned yet in the album, but drinking was mentioned earlier in the song. Like, so it is a very possible solution. And I mean, this entire song is pretty much like summed up in that first verse. I mean, there's not really much to explain after that. I mean, you know, we'll go over it, obviously, but it's like, that is what the song is about, is I'm drinking, and, you know, to escape the reality that I'm in.
Which is terrible, but, you know, the coping mechanism is obviously drinking away the pain or whatnot.
Right. And, you know, the chorus is, or the pre-chorus, you know, I've really been on a bender, and it shows. And then it says, so why don't you blow me a kiss before she goes? So basically, I mean, you know, continuing the bad behavior, like, you know, sort of sexualizing a possibly, you know, a relationship that is sort of using your situation as like manipulation to get like a sexual favor, but it also could be in a nod to death itself, by saying a kiss before she goes, and then it continues to say, give me a shot to remember, and you can take all the pain away from me, your kiss and I will surrender, the sharpest lives are the deadliest to lead. So a popular sort of saying, I guess, is death's kiss, which is, you know, literal dying. And, you know, give me a shot to remember, referring to alcohol, but also could be referring to a actual bullet wound. And you can take all the pain away from me, which, you know, could, you know, be mentioning, you know, the pain that the patient is in from having to go through all of this stuff in the hospital, as well as the mental pain that alcohol relieves because it is a depressant. And then a light, the next line in the chorus is a light to burn all the empires so bright. The sun is ashamed to rise and be in love with all of these vampires so you can leave like the sane abandon me. So I'm going to be honest, this line, most of it completely goes over my head. I'm not really sure what it is in reference to. You know, they are referencing like vampires, which are sort of like, you know, blood-sucking creatures, but I'm not sure what that has to do with relation to the actual theme itself. And then the next line, so you can leave like the sane abandon me. The adjectives of sane, like you can leave like the sane abandoned me, sort of feels like a sort of oh poor sane abandoned me, you know, sort of like a pity party type thing. But it's also true because it's like, you know,
you could quite literally take off and leave me here,
right?
Because so you're stable and I'm clearly not,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, that's pretty much this song. I think it's kind of funny. I've been thinking about this, started off as like a joke, but the more I thought about it, the truer it got is like this album in relation to like the Breaking Bad story. Because in this, it starts off with like, you know, Walter White is diagnosed with cancer.
Yeah.
And it's uncurable, basically, is what they tell him. Like it's terminal. Yeah. They can stall it, but they won't be able to do anything against it. It's lung cancer.
Just treat it, but not entirely.
Yeah. Cured. It won't be gone. And it will kill him. And you know, so then he turns to
alcoholism, a bunch of reckless, obviously.
I don't remember him ever actually turning to alcoholism specifically, but he definitely does turn to like worsened behavior overall. He also mentioned to like the hypersexual sort of like terrible behavior because of it, you know, it is also something that Walter experiences, and it's kind of it. I mean, I'll get into it a lot more in the later tracks as well, if you know. But it started off as like a joke in my head, and the more I thought about it, the more it made sense. And so, yeah, those are the three songs for this episode. Or four songs, actually. I counted at the end instead. Next episode, we're going to cover Welcome to the Black Parade, I Don't Love You, and then House of Wolves, which I'm sure will get a lot of discussion because Welcome to the Black Parade is a very long, it's a long song. It is full of a lot of different
themes, I guess.
Themes.
Yeah,
emotion. It's a strong song.
A significant track.
It's definitely a significant track in the overall you know,
the album
theme relative to the album. Yeah. Yeah, so I think that'll be it. Thank you all so much for listening.
Hopefully you will join us.
There will be more episodes. We are going to be covering the entire album.
Yeah. Thank you for listening.